Section 5. A Troubled End to the Century. As you read, look for the origin of the fusion movement, the 1898 election and its results, North Carolina's involvement in the Spanish-American War, and the following terms, fusionists and white supremacy. As the 19th century came to a close, both North Carolina and the nation were involved in conflicts. The short-lived success of the populists and Republicans in restoring Governor Holden's reforms came to an end with the election of 1898, when Democrats were returned to power in the state. Violence broke out in Wilmington as a result of that election. Also in 1898, the United States entered into war against Spain. The Spanish-American War ended quickly, and no North Carolina regiments were sent into battle, but several North Carolinians, both black and white, were recognized for their accomplishments in that war. The Fusion Movement. The populists in North Carolina ran candidates for the state legislature, which still chose U.S. senators, and for Congress throughout the 1890s. Most populists had once voted for Democrats, the party that had canceled many of the reforms of Governor Holden. When the populists did not win in 1892, the Republicans in North Carolina offered to help them win the 1894 election in return for restoring some of Holden's reforms. The Republicans and the populists nominated one set of candidates, with each party providing half of the contestants. Together, they swept the state. History by the Highway, the Waldensians. A Protestant religious group known as Waldensians moved from the Italian Alps to North Carolina in 1893. They were the only significant group of immigrants to come into the state during this period. In the early 1900s, the Waldensians established the town of Valdez in the foothills. When they found that farming was not thriving in the state, they built their own factories and knit socks and made bread. The Waldensians continued to have their own church and customs through the 20th century. Section 5 continued. The Fusionists, as they were called, controlled North Carolina from 1895 through 1898 and reintroduced many of the old Holden reforms. The legislature made county government elective again, allowing the people of a county to choose their own justices of the peace. Fusionists also passed an election law calling for an election judge from each party to be present when votes were counted. All three political parties could now be sure that they were getting a fair count. The Fusionists wanted to improve schools in rural areas, but the farmers were not willing to pay more taxes. Fusionist reforms clearly restored the fortunes of Republicans in the state. White voters in the mountains had an easier time at the polling place, as did black voters from the coastal plain. As a result, in the dozen counties where blacks were the majority, they elected African-American officials. All 32 justices of the peace elected in Edgecombe County were black. Most of the city officials in Wilmington were black. The reformers also attempted to help the poor of both races. They passed a law making it easier for people to pay back their debts without losing their land. The legislature even discussed taking tax money away from public universities and sharing it with private colleges to give citizens more choices in education. The 1898 election. All the fusionist ideas alarmed the Democrats. If Republicans gained a new foothold, they feared the state would be plunged back into Negro rule and Democrats would lose their power. In particular, the leaders in the East saw they would no longer be able to control their own legislators and congressmen. Eastern Democrats, led by Furnifold M. Simmons of New Bern and Charles B. Aycock of Goldsboro, decided they would repeat the same type of racial slurs they had used during Reconstruction to recapture unhappy white voters. With their white supremacy campaign, the Democrats successfully took back control of North Carolina. White supremacy is the belief that the white race is superior to any other race. The white supremacists organized clubs in every county in the state and, through sympathetic newspapers like the Charlotte Observer and the News and Observer of Raleigh, spread any stories they could about blacks making mistakes or committing crimes. They were helped when a white girl, Emma Hartzell, of Cabarrus County, was murdered. A neighborhood posse of whites and blacks immediately lynched two black men found with blood on their shirts. Emma's father had been a populist. When he publicly regretted ever voting for fusionists, the tide turned. As racial tensions worsened throughout the state, the Democrats won a narrow victory and took back the legislature from the fusionists. Just after Election Day, violence swept through Wilmington as white mobs took vengeance on African Americans who had long run the city. Republican officials were given hours to take a train out of town, black businesses were burned, and perhaps as many as 60 African American residents of Wilmington were murdered. Some of the bodies were thrown into the Cape Fear River. These episodes became known as the Wilmington Race Riots. The Spanish-American War. North Carolinians had more on their minds than white supremacy in 1898. During the summer, the United States went to war with Spain over conditions in Cuba. During what came to be called the Spanish-American War, America won quick victories in Cuba and the Philippine Islands in the Pacific. The United States eventually annexed, took control of, the Philippines and helped Cuba become an independent nation. North Carolina raised 3 regiments, large military units, for the war. Given the tensions of the times, the regiments were totally segregated. 2 were made up of whites, the 3rd was black volunteers. A white company from Hickory was even told it could not keep its black barber in camp, even though he was an official member of the unit. Despite the racial prejudices of the day, an African American, Charles Taylor of Charlotte, commanded the black regiment. Colonel Taylor became the highest-ranking black officer in the Army during the war. None of the North Carolina regiments came under fire in the war, but Naval Officer Worth Bagley, a Raleigh native, was one of the first Americans to be killed. State citizens soon erected a statue to honor his memory in the Capitol Square. Several other state residents were later killed serving with the Philippine occupation forces in an unofficial war that lasted into the new century. The art of politics. Yellow journalism is a term coined in the 1890s to refer to newspapers that relied on sensational reporting of crime and other stories to build up circulation. Sensationalist news reports following the explosion of the USS Maine in Havana Harbor is often given as one of the reasons for the Spanish-American War. In this cartoon, the two leading practitioners of yellow journalism, Joseph Pulitzer, left, and William Randolph Hearst, right, are shown pushing against a stack of children's blocks spelling war, symbolically fighting over who deserved credit for starting the war. Special feature, Carolina Places, Biltmore House. One of the great ironies in the history of North Carolina is the fact that the state was so poor in the 1800s, yet one of the most expensive residences ever built was constructed here. The Biltmore House, originally a part-time home of the Vanderbilt family of New York City, was built just south of Asheville in the 1890s. It was then, as it is today, the largest private residence in the United States. Cornelius Vanderbilt made the family fortune as the owner of ships and later of railroads. Although the Vanderbilts owned mansions in New York City and Newport, Rhode Island, George Washington Vanderbilt, one of Cornelius's grandsons, wanted his own country house. During a trip to Asheville in the 1880s, Vanderbilt thought that the mountains were as lovely as those in Europe. He decided to build a manor here that would look like one in Europe. Vanderbilt proceeded to buy thousands of acres of forest south and west of Asheville. He had workers from across the nation come to build a town that looked like Switzerland. Biltmore Village, as it was called, served as the base for the construction of the Vanderbilt Mansion. The village had a church, stores, a school, and a hospital. Its rental cottages had indoor plumbing and central heating, a first for a North Carolina community. It took 5 years to complete the 250-room Biltmore House. All the limestone came from a quarry in Indiana and was brought by railroad through the mountains. The style closely matched a famous French chateau, Great House, near Paris. The fireplace in the banquet hall was as large as any that had warmed a Renaissance king. Along the wall were hung 5 different French tapestries, cloth wall hangings that had pictures woven in, that were hundreds of years old. The Vanderbilts installed modern conveniences like a furnace, 43 indoor bathrooms, a kitchen that could handle the meals for hundreds, an indoor swimming pool, and a bowling alley. Frederick Law Olmsted, who had laid out Central Park in New York City, designed the landscaped grounds. For example, the house is approached by 2 different driveways. Each is lined by exactly spaced tulip poplar trees. Biltmore was more than just a house. It had a complete estate of farms and mills around it. Vanderbilt hired Gifford Pinchot, one of the first professionally trained foresters in the United States, to rehabilitate the thousands of acres that had been stripped of timber. Pinchot helped establish the country's first school of forestry in the Biltmore Forest. In addition, Vanderbilt started Biltmore Dairy, which produced milk from his own cows as well as cows from across the mountains. The dairy helped North Carolina become a leading dairy state in the early 1900s. George W. Vanderbilt raised his family in the house. After Vanderbilt died in 1914, his widow reduced the family holdings, selling the village and the forest but keeping the dairy. A daughter opened the estate to the public in 1930, allowing tours. A grandson, William Cecil, began to renovate many of the most spectacular rooms in 1960. Members of the Cecil family have continued to restore the house and grounds. Over time, more and more of the estate came to be seen by the public. But even into the 21st century, Biltmore remains a home of the Vanderbilt's descendants. More than 1,500 people work there, and more than 900,000 people come to see the house, grounds, and forest each year.